Hello, fellow propaniacs. Milton McManerberry here with a shameless plug for my new podcast, Nashville Anthems, Dissecting 80s and 90s Country Music. I'll be trying to get to the bottom of what makes that genre and era stand out, at least in my mind, by picking apart one song at a time. If that sounds like your can of Alamo, please check it out. The first episode publishes January 24th, 2022, and it will be on a separate feed, so be on the lookout. But enough of the previews, on with the main feature.
Propane Maniacs!
Welcome to the Propane Maniacs podcast. In this episode, we're exchanging Valentines and cooking beef Wellington while Hank and Peggy dig up the ancient past in I Remember Mono. I'm Daisy Durndal, and here with some vitamin A-filled butter
is Milton McManerberry. Come for the vitamin A, stay for the saturated fat.
And we are here having our tea and Texas toast.
Well, speaking of kitchens, that is where this episode starts. We run into Peggy the nutritionist. We ran into her and Hank's unmentionable problem as well. Peggy the clueless nutritionist. She serves Bobby this giant, huge stack of pancakes. And then she says, encourages Bobby at least to eat his butter because it has lots of vitamin A.
This is actually true. Butter does have a lot of vitamin A.
Is that a fact?
Mm-hmm.
So it helps your eyesight. Okay, well.
So, Peggy got this one for once. Maybe she was just guessing.
Score one for Peggy, whether it was luck or not.
Broken clock is
right twice
whatever.
A day.
Yeah.
So, Bobby, what's Bobby up to?
Thank Bobby is writing out his Valentines, and he's making sure that he has them ready to be mailed in time for Valentine's Day.
And they're to his classmates. One would think he would just give them out.
Save 30 stamps, but whatever.
That's definitely what we did in my class. We had a day where we kind of just passed out by Valentine's. So, Hank is, so he sees what Bobby is doing, kind of realizes that the Valentine, or I guess Bobby tells him that the Valentine that he's giving out is for Joseph. And Hank, I think, is once again overestimating Bobby's developmental stage. We have seen that before. He sees Valentine's as kind of a bigger deal than Bobby would or Bobby's class would at that age. Doesn't kind of see that it's just something kind of you do with your friends, in addition to maybe romantic stuff, but it's perfectly fine to give for him to give a friend a Valentine. Also, I'm pretty sure Joseph is not hot stuff. I'm not seeing him on a skateboard, as Bobby said, but I don't think of Joseph Gribble as hot stuff.
Well, Bobby's a little bit biased, maybe.
Yeah.
So Hank is worried that people will think that Bobby is sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this whole ordeal. And this is just another one of those examples of Bobby's going to be perfectly fine when he grows up. He is comfortable with who he is, and that is like the most important thing you can be. And Hank never became comfortable with who he is.
Or who Bobby is.
Yeah.
You know, they keep threatening. I hear this every now and then, at the time of this recording anyway, listeners to do like a sequel series, King of the Hill, where Bobby's all grown up.
Do not want.
Please don't do that. If anyone out there in the unlikely event that you're listening and are making that decision, please leave well enough alone. Don't do this to us.
I hate reboots. I hate remakes.
Sequels and everything else.
I hate that stuff so much. I really do.
Let it be.
Yeah.
This was a great show. We'll just let it live that way for all eternity.
Stop reinventing the wheel, millennials and Gen Zs.
Amen. Amen.
Sheesh.
Oh, I thought it was kind of funny that Hank throws away Bobby's Valentine, which was the reason Bobby didn't eat his pancakes, yet he still doesn't get pancakes. He still is sitting there just scooping out butter and getting his vitamin A that way.
So, poor Luann. This is another episode where Buckley is being so self-centered.
Yes.
And I don't remember how old Buckley is supposed to be, like 18, 19-ish.
Yeah.
Seems like guys at that age really are just clueless and selfish.
I can attest to that. I just raised my hand.
I mean, that's, from what I remember, that's how it was.
Yep.
I think that's why girls like older guys at that age, especially at that age.
But Luann, boy, she loves Buckley, or she's at least infatuated with Buckley. He does not reciprocate very well, no doubt. And, well, it was interesting, though. Luann feels like she's come to an epiphany about love, and Hank and Peggy are not buying it. She quotes Whitney Houston, "The greatest love of all," saying loving oneself is the greatest love of all. And I love Hank and Peggy just kind of deadpan logic her, like,
no.
I really don't think so, Luann.
They're just like, no, you're wrong. It's not.
They're not buying it.
But they're also, you know, old school.
Well, as they're sitting at the table, they end up going into a flashback as Peggy tells the story of how she and Hank, well, she says, got engaged to be engaged. But anyway, the story about
their super romantic.
Yeah, super romantic thing. And there's all kinds of interesting stuff in here. As we often see, especially young Peggy, she played a lot of softball. She is holding and swinging the bat right-handed, ladies and gentlemen. She's swinging left-handed. Bobby Slam. So she is a switch hitter, for what that's worth. I like that Hank asked Peggy out for Valentine's by not even asking her, hinting to her that she should ask him if she could make his dinner for him. So Hank invited Peggy to cook for him. And I mean, clearly what's happening here, Hank is trying Peggy out as a wife. He wants to see if Peggy can do what wives are supposed to do. And what are wives supposed to do?
Cook.
Cook.
Clean.
Raise the children, and bring him his slippers. So here we go. This is wife 101. Can she cook or not? Of course, Hank doesn't question the appropriateness of that as a standard, let alone the appropriateness of that as a request. It's not a very gentlemanly request to invite your lady to cook for you, rather than inviting to take her out. Or, I know this is going to sound crazy, but cook for her. But that's the way they rolled, and Peggy is not remotely offended by it anyway, so.
I mean, I was a baby at the end of the 70s, so I couldn't say anything about what dating was like back then. But that seemed a little old-fashioned even for the 70s to me.
Yeah, it feels like they were old-fashioned even for the 70s. That was supposed to be 1975. We know that because the calendar in Hank's room actually says that. It shows 1975 on the calendar. But it did feel a little older than that. Like, I don't know, even Peggy's hair looked like it was more from like the 50s or 60s, I thought.
Maybe because they're in a small town. It's alluding to small towns being backwards and out of touch.
It is true, folks. Trends get to small towns a little later than they do everywhere else. I can attest to that.
Yeah.
That was that movie, Napoleon Dynamite. I think that's why that movie threw people off. People didn't understand. They thought maybe the movie was like set in the 80s. No, no, no. The movie wasn't set in the 80s. It was just set in a small town where the trends around that town hadn't gotten to it yet. People were still doing traffic.
Remote Idaho town.
Right, right. Same sort of thing here. I think it's true. But keep in mind that 1975, that will be important later. There's more deadpan logic here, kind of like Hank and Peggy were doing to Luann. Now, this is from young Hank to young Peggy. He had hurt his back, or so he said, and told her on the phone. Peggy said, I'm just glad you're okay. But I'm not okay. I hurt my back. That was pretty good.
Yeah. So then Peggy is trying to cook Hank a dinner.
Oh, she aimed high on that, too.
Beef Wellington.
Yeah, I've never had beef Wellington.
I've never seen it on, I don't think I've ever seen it on a menu either. I think that's one of those dishes that went out of style and never came back.
1950s England is what it sounds like.
And cherry pie and blueberry pie.
I kind of get the idea, and I get that it's a challenge. It's like a pastry-covered huge thing of beef that you roast, I think is the idea.
Yeah, something like that.
She, for some reason, picked this very difficult dish, and she can't even cook. And she's slaving over it, and Hank didn't even know what it was. It was, huh, is that steak? It's beef? Cool, you know.
Okay, so Peggy's mom is kind of going, why are you trying to make this meal you can't even bake? What is Hank going to think when he finds this out? I would have let my mom do the cooking for me. Or help with her or something.
You also wouldn't have stayed with a guy who basically demanded that you cook for him on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, no. So Peggy wrecks this dinner, and Peggy's mom gives her the best compliment ever. Your eyebrows look very nice. I don't even understand.
I think what happened there...
Did she cinch her eyebrows?
Yes. When she poured the sherry on the beef Wellington, lit it on fire, I think it burned her eyebrows. Her eyebrows off, she had to paint them back on. I think that was
the deal. Oh, wow. I just thought it was a random compliment. I missed that.
I like it better as a random compliment. I would go with that.
So Hank calls, says, you know, I've hurt my back. I can't come over. Peggy is relieved because she's wrecked dinner.
Right.
So she's describing the meal to Hank. And things get a little weird.
They do. That phone conversation went in a disturbing direction.
Teenage phone sex is weird.
Yeah, and then how it's kind of mixed up with appreciation for beef and cherry pie, but...
Amateurs.
The other thing I wanted to mention from this, Peggy's severe upbringing. Her mom won't allow her to use contractions, and I did pay attention. I wanted to make sure that Peggy's mom didn't herself use contractions. She did not. So she, not a hypocrite, but boy, what a severe upbringing. And kind of like knowing more about Cotton helps us understand Hank. Knowing more about Peggy's mom helps us understand Peggy. But anyway, yeah, it just seemed like her mom was just very harsh on her, very severe, very, I'm not sure strict is the right word, but kept the standards high, even on trivial things. You can kind of see that working its way out in Peggy as an adult. How Peggy is kind of, we talked about how kind of mechanical she is and everything. And I think she fancies herself a perfectionist, even though she, you know, doesn't most of the time know what she's talking about or what she's doing. Ignorance is bliss.
And at the same time, she spoils Bobby and coddles Bobby a lot.
Yeah, kind of a reaction against what her mom did to her. Yeah, right, true, right. True. Anyway, so the flashback ends back at the kitchen table. Bobby and Luann are unimpressed by this story that Peggy just told.
Because it's boring.
Yeah, it was boring. The story is a legend only in Peggy's own mind.
I mean, Luann kind of thought it was romantic, but I think she was kind of missing a lot of the point. She wasn't really listening to the story. She was listening and going in her own imagination with it.
Yeah, you could call this Luann. Did you find this story romantic or cute?
Nah, I thought it was pretty boring, but it takes a lot to impress me.
Mm-hmm. Kind of thought it was cute for Hank and Peggy, put it that way. It's fitting for Hank and Peggy.
For Hank and Peggy, it is overly romantic.
Yes, yeah, right, by that standard. One more nice touch in this listeners, the phone cord is hanging from the phone in the kitchen there behind the table. You know how phone cords are twisted.
It had like,
know,
that one little kink.
Yeah, you know how they're like reverse.
Yeah, I always try to
undo those.
Yes. I always do. The only way you can undo it is by unplugging the phone
and then wrapping it around your finger
and then fixing it. Yeah, we don't have that problem anymore.
No, that's a thing of the past, and yeah. I used to really enjoy doing that. It felt so good. That's the price of technology, folks. Okay, next scene is in the alley. Bobby is out there. He's gotten a card from a secret admirer. It is so perfect that Bobby immediately assumes that the secret admirer is Carrie Strug, the gymnast from the 1996 U.S. female gymnastics team.
I like how wishful thinking jumps completely over the fence into probability.
Right. Yeah, sure. When I was just talking about her, why wouldn't... love it. And that he has a crush on Carrie Strug is just perfect. If you were there during that time, listeners, you probably remember. You would remember that name.
I remember her pixie cut and her squeaky voice.
Yes. Yeah. I don't think she has one line, but her voice does appear in this episode.
You know, I think I saw a documentary a few years ago, and she was all grown up and she still had that voice, and it just took me back, and I was like, oh.
Makes sense. Presumably her leg is all healed up by now. But that was a big deal back then, so it certainly makes sense that that's where Bobby's mind would have gone. I love it. Because in his small world, what's in the news, what's immediately around him, that's what he knows. That's
perception,
kind of all there is to it.
Perception is reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the next scene, Peggy is in, I guess it's the Tom Landry Middle School administrative office. She's doing some data entry in for permanent records out loud. I guess Peggy is one of these workers who has to, like, say what she's doing as she does it for everybody around her to hear she was doing that.
I bet she mouths words as she reads, too.
I bet. Limited choices motif shows up here. She's calling out some of the codes that go into the permanent record. Code this, code that. And two of the codes are not following directions and following directions too closely. I like that. Got to get that King of the Hill box between those two extremes.
So, the other lady doing data entry, she's reading off things that are in Hank's file. Like, in fourth grade, he was kicked out of chorus for refusing to sing Where Have All the Flowers Gone. You know, doing very Hank things at a very young age. And to Peggy, it's cute because that's her Hank. And then we get to the mono.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know, I can attest personally that you can get mono without kissing.
Kissing is not one of the more common ways to get mono. Sharing drinks, sharing food. So, the Epstein-Barr virus is what causes mono in almost all cases. Very, very contagious. Most people get it as children and they don't get sick. It's when people get it as teenagers and adults that it presents as mono. I happen to know this because I was blood tested for the Epstein-Barr virus, and I had a bunch of it in my system, but I didn't have antibodies, which would suggest that I had contracted the virus at some point in my life. But I've never had mono.
I have had it, for sure.
Oh, geez.
I had it in eighth grade, and it was bad. It was not a fun experience at all. So I definitely would not have been eating beef Wellington during that experience. I remember it very well.
No kissing girls?
No, or doing much of anything else.
How do you think you got it?
I have no idea. It was not from kissing anyone, but I don't know how I got it. And I don't know anyone else who had it that I went to school with, so it remains a mystery, folks.
Like I said, not everyone that has it gets sick.
Well, that fact is hardly questioned or not known, or in this episode, they just kind of assume that mono has its moniker of the kissing disease is something that's earned. Although the
school nurse... happened in the 30s. Like, it became known in the 30s, I think, as the kissing disease.
Yeah, the thing is, of course, that is how Hank got it, as we find out, but the school nurse had told Peggy that you could not get it from sharing drinks. At least that's what she tells Hank.
Well, she failed to mention it.
Failed to mention it, that's right. Yeah, you're right. That is the way they worded that.
Of course, I mean, the nurse is probably not completely educated on it either.
And also, she's a drunk for
oh,
Dale.
Okay.
That's what Dale said, or is implied.
So, there you have it.
Well, and all this alley stuff where Peggy drives up and is confronting Hank with this whole thing about mono being on his permanent record, not that he lied about his back issues on that Valentine's Day. Has some other neat, interesting things in there. There's some good limited choices here. Dale and Hank, I don't know where Boomhauer and Bill are. But anyway, he says, you ever thought about drinking beer over there, Hank, instead of where they're standing in the alley? Curiosity killed the cat, Dale. We're limited choices there. We don't think outside the box.
We never change things.
Yeah, no. Why would you do that? And I like the animation on Dale as he says, I don't spill the beans, Hank. I place information. There's a little gesture he does with his hand. That was a lot of fun.
By the way, it is entirely possible Peggy gave Hank mono.
Ah, because she may have been, asymptomatic or whatever?
Mm-hmm. super, super transmissible virus.
Okay. Well, the next scene is in Bobby's classroom. Bobby's holding court. Bobby Slampy was doing that. He does that. He'll have the other kids around him, and he'll kind of hold court. And he kind of gets in his element telling stories and stuff.
Bobby's a confident kid, and people are attracted to confidence. So that makes perfect sense for Bobby.
He's feeling that too because he makes this comment about, like, if somebody's liking you, it's like having a ring on your finger.
Yeah.
Okay, back in the Tom Landry Middle School administrative office, Peggy and this unnamed other lady are again doing permanent records work. They continue to talk about this whole thing about Hank having mono. I think they uncover someone else who had mono.
So who is this Amy Skank that we're speaking of here?
Amy Edlin. I don't know. I think this is her first and only appearance.
Did she go to Arlen High School? How would they have her record?
This is a good point.
Because Hank didn't seem to know who she was.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're entering data for the entire school district or just one school or what.
Kind of seemed like she might have, like, recently transferred or something. Maybe she just moved. You know, you have those kids who kind of, like, show up mid-school year or something. That kind of the new kids on the block. Maybe so. Well, anyway, Peggy, now she has an enemy.
Yeah.
A scapegoat, maybe is the better word to describe what she was looking for, in Amy Edlin. And she goes to talk to Nancy about it at this place called Tea and Texas Toast. And that, I'm all out of tea and Texas toast. That was the inspiration for our snack today.
I'd let you have my leftover Texas toast, but I've bitten out of it and you could get mono.
That's right.
Because we know I'm full of the virus.
And then we'd have a whole Melton's wife at the permanent records office situation on our hands.
I don't need Melton's wife confronting me at my job.
Where you're trying to give out ostrich meat. Sausage.
Sausage.
I like Peggy's hypocrisy here. Notice what she said to Nancy, that she had lied to Amy Edlin in order to find out where she worked. So, like, she lied in order to get the truth.
She made pretended to be a telemarketer.
Right, yeah. But there's hypocrisy there anyway. Peggy's whole thing here is that she wants the truth. Then it's like, well, you can't handle the truth, is what Nancy tells her. But anyway,
the truth is like sunlight. People used to think it was good for you.
Yes, that's a great Nancy quote. So I think Nancy's quote raises the central question of the episode. The question is, when is the story more important than the truth? Or which is more important, the story or the truth? To Peggy, this story is the whole key to her and Hank's relationship.
Yeah, it's their origin story.
Yeah, their origin story. And it turns out that it's not true. And that's the question. How much does that or should that matter? And that's what Peggy's wrestling with.
I mean, it's like 90% true. The reason that he couldn't have Valentine's dinner is the only thing that's not true here.
It's a good point. He was...
And it's really irrelevant, but I can see Peggy's logic. You know, one lie and the whole thing unravels.
Mm. Yeah.
As a female, I can get that. I understand that.
Yeah, but I like your point there, is that he truly was incapacitated. He did lie about why he was incapacitated, but actually the whole thing with the Beef Wellington and him not being able to come and him calling, all that really happened.
Yeah, and none of that changes by this fact.
Yeah, that's true.
So also, I've been thinking about this ever since I saw this episode. The whole saying that he had hurt his back instead of saying that he had mono, not only is it protecting the fact that he got kissed by another girl, it's also kind of a macho thing. I got hurt playing football.
Oh, true. That's right.
I'm not ill. A virus couldn't bring me down.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's where his mind went to as an excuse, isn't it? Yeah, you could have an easier excuse if you're looking for a lie. You want something that's kind of close to the truth that you're trying to conceal. Say you had the flu. Why?
But at the same time, I don't think Peggy would have been deterred by a virus.
Yeah, that's true.
However, Peggy was so relieved about him not coming over, I think she would have accepted anything. But right. He didn't know that.
Yeah, that's true. It's a really good point. Well, let's back over to Bobby and his B story about Carrie Strug here. He and Joseph go to the Arlen Mall because I guess they want to buy her a Valentine's present or something. They end up going into...
When she shows up at his door because Carrie Strug is going to come over to Bobby's house.
That much is a given. They know that.
Yeah.
It's just a question of what else is going to happen, how we're going to handle it at this point.
But I like Bobby's little daydream, his little gymnastics outfit. Carrie Strug says to him, "It's compulsory that you be my Valentine."
Yeah, that was great. Perfect. Nice touch, too, because she gives him a gold medal, and the gold turns out to be gold aluminum foil that he pulls off and eats it. Which,
a big chocolate medal. Yeah,
which feels just right. It always seems like, I feel like I would want to do that if I got a gold medal also.
I would rather it be chocolate myself.
Yeah. Okay, now Peggy knows where Amy Edlin works, this place called Pink and White, and she goes to confront her. She's giving out...
Sausage.
I feel like that was a thing in the late 90s. I was hearing a lot about emu meat at the time, so I guess ostriches and emus are like similar or whatever.
There's a lot of exotic game in Texas. It's a thing. My mom had a friend who, I guess, bred emus or imported emus or sold emus or did something. And I thought it was weird.
Well, that's what Amy does. So there's something going on here. I think Amy's occupation, where she works, and then she and Peggy shortly go to the meat cooler where the cow carcasses are hung to sit and talk this thing out. And the suggestion here,
I think, her break at work.
Right, but the thing is, I guess that she works in a place where her break room is also a meat cooler. The whole thing, I think, is a suggestion that Amy is of a lower class. I think that may be a lot of what Peggy never really thinks like this out loud or explicitly. I think that may be a lot of Peggy's objection, is that she feels like not only did Hank cheat on her, but it was with a woman of lower station than the even lower middle class station that Peggy had.
I feel like for Peggy, she would have to be of lower class, because if Hank had cheated on her with someone of higher class, that wouldn't have been possible.
True. Well, Amy tells the story of what happened. So it goes to her own flashback and how she, I guess, seduced, if you will. I mean, we're saying cheating, we're saying seduced, but it's all very innocent and light, and there's not really much to it.
Yeah, she felt she had something to prove to whom, I don't know, to herself, I guess.
Yeah, right. The whole thing is she sets herself up as a damsel in distress so Hank can come to the rescue.
Yeah.
And she lies about her boyfriend. In reality, as she told Peggy, they had just broken up. But she tells Hank in the flashback, my boyfriend was killed in the jungles of Vietnam. But remember what year this was?
1975.
There were no Americans killed in the jungles of Vietnam in 1975. They had all pulled out 2 years ago.
Maybe she just couldn't get over it for a couple years. But she was also betting on Hank being too taken by her femininity to think about the logic of, wait a minute, we're not in Vietnam anymore.
Yeah, true.
Which
right.
worked, because Hank's a teenage guy. And
I think it kind of betrays the fact that Hank is not the innocent victim in this that even Amy is portraying as, or that he himself might think of himself as. He was more willing in this than he wants to admit.
Well, I mean, he was willing to help her with the bicycle chain, and then she kind of forced herself on him, and then he ran away. So he was willing to help her out, but he even said, I have a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Hank really was innocent. It was just skanky Amy being skanky Amy.
So you're saying it was not skank Hank, but skank Amy in this case?
Correct.
Mm.
So there you have it. There's the truth. I don't know how Amy could remember this. I can't remember a thing about who I kissed and when and the circumstances from my teenage years.
I think there's a suggestion that Amy kind of deals in this currency. Even at the beginning of the scene at Pink and White, she seduced, if you will, some dude who was just kind of walking by into eating some of her sausages because his wife wasn't around to stop him. So she kind of keeps these notches on her bedpost, and here again, not really, the bedroom is not involved in what Hank and Amy did, but in her mind and her world, that was one of her conquests, and that's why she remembers it. I think that's the suggestion anyway. Daisy, I watched this episode 3 times. Every time I watched it, I could not resist. After Hank says to her in this flashback, you're very brave to bicycle in the state you're in, I said Texas every time.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's...
You're welcome. Why aren't Peggy and Amy cold in this meat cooler? they're not shivering, they're just dressed normal, they're just sitting and talking like it's nothing.
Probably because, well, for Peggy, she's probably pretty heated up with emotion.
Oh, yeah.
And Amy probably...
She's used to it.
Yeah.
Her normal habitat. Here again, I still see it. I still think that Amy is portrayed as of ill repute and of lower class, and that's a part of the problem. But because she reaches into her, I guess it's kind of under her apron, but it's her bust, and pulls out it's a coupon to get 30 cents off of her sausage products or something.
That's all she can give. She can't take away the pain.
Yes, but she
Which
can
is very true.
30 cents. All right. We're back in the kitchen, and Peggy is now kind of confronting Hank with all this. Hank is kind of groveling, and he sees he's got a big problem. He thought maybe he'd dodged the bullet in the alley, but he dodged the bullet. He's in big trouble. Because despite, as you said, medically, despite the fact that there's no real reason to think that Hank had kissed anybody to get mono, he did. That is actually what happened.
Yeah.
And he has been caught with his hand in the cookie jar, if you will. His practical problem solving comes out because... Actually, through the whole rest of the episode, Hank is just trying to make up instantly. Whatever it takes to get over this bad situation, fix it, let's do it right away. But Peggy, she exaggerates. When she's reading Hank the Riot Act about all this, I think she's overstating it. So one, she says that we told Luann the story at breakfast, but we didn't tell Luann anything. Peggy told Luann and Bobby the story at breakfast. Hank was actually trying to wave her off, like, don't tell it, don't tell it. So she's accusing him of lying basically by sharing the story with Luann and Bobby, but she's the only one who did that. And also, not to excuse the fact that Hank certainly lied here, to say that the fact that he went 20 years without confessing means he lied about it every day? Yeah, come on.
That's how some women think. Also, if Peggy didn't have a whole lot of boyfriends, and Hank was, you know, her only real one, I can see why this would be a bigger deal to her. Mm. Something like this would not be a big deal to me, but I'm not Peggy.
I mean, it's a huge deal for her because she sees not only his silence about it as an active lie, she sees their whole marriage as a lie. It's built on a lie, therefore, they practically aren't married. I mean, this is just a huge thing in her mind.
I mean, they were together before this. It's not like this is what brought them together.
Right. And like you said, it was, the central story is still right. It's still, the story is as true.
It's a detail.
Right. Not saying that Hank, you know, should get a free pass on this, but it feels a little over the top for me.
I mean, I know, you know, like in the teenager's head, that things are a way bigger deal than they are to adults. Mm. So I can see that. And Peggy's mindset is still hanging on to that.
And frankly, Peggy doesn't have a whole lot else going on. Yeah. I mean, her marriage and her home life is kind of it, like that, yeah. You know. So if something strikes at that, I guess it strikes at everything. So, yeah, as I said, I'm not buying Hank's excuse too much here. I don't think he was as innocent as he claims, but I also really like his offense-defense analogy. He's like, look, I'm 17. I was working on offense, not defense. Okay, yeah, fair enough. I can get that. I can get that. So here's what's interesting about this to me, Daisy. The question that I felt like the scene with Nancy posed, which is more important, the story or the truth, I feel like Peggy is kind of flipping that or turning it upside down. And she's now wrestling with, when does the truth depend on the story? So rather than the other way around, does the story have to be true? She's really saying, does truth need the story? Do we really have this wonderful marriage that I thought we have if we don't have the story?
You know, if they both had amnesia or both completely forgot about this story, it wouldn't change anything.
For some reason, Peggy's mind does not work that way, but yeah. As indication, sometimes happens in King of the Hill of Peggy's physical strength, and here it is. She had punched a cow carcass at the end of her conversation with Amy Edlin, and turns out that she had to buy it because she broke 3 ribs in the cow carcass by punching it, and apparently didn't break any of her own bones. And then what's neat about that is it turns right around into the next scene of Luann and Bobby in the garage, and they're butchering that cow carcass with Hank's power tools. I love it.
I want to know how much that set them back.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering the same thing. But they're probably going to sell it. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But
they'll freeze the meat and cook it.
There's a nice contrast here between the subject and the setting because Luann and Bobby are having a kind of tender conversation about his fantasy meeting with Carrie Strug, about Luann's struggles with the fact that she doesn't have a boyfriend or that Buckley has ditched her once again on Valentine's Day. All while Luann is doing the butchering of a cow with Hank's power tools. And there even bits of cow carcass are flying onto them on their little safety glasses and little goggles that they're wearing.
Why isn't Hank doing this butchering? Why is Luann doing it?
He is busy getting raked over the coals by Peggy in that moment. Maybe he'll go help her later. It looks like Luann likes it. I think Luann is enjoying doing it.
Yeah.
It's like working out some of her frustrations with Buckley.
Yeah. Surprised the guys aren't trying to help.
True.
Is butchering me woman's work? I don't think it is, but I don't know.
I put in the same category as working on cars. Maybe more not traditionally women's work, but something Luann's very good at. Okay, so the next morning, and we get a view of Piggy's bedhead. We see that once in a while in King of the Hill. Boy, there's a lot of hair up there.
Her hair is a source of constant amusement to me.
Mm-hmm. I just like to give a realistic bedhead. Yeah. You just don't see other shows do that, and I like that they do it. She gives Hank a shoulder that's as cold as those cow carcasses she was punching at Pink and White. Mm-hmm. Ooh, man, cold as ice. She is not feeling Hank right now.
Yeah.
So he just makes his exit, but man, not pretty. Later on, he's talking to the guys in the alley. Big surprise here that he gets terrible marriage advice from the guys.
Boomhauer mentions whipped cream and plastic wrap, a suggestion which Daisy knows is quite overrated.
Not touching that. Poor Bill. He starts describing this romantic comedy and had to turn his head so he could cry and the guys couldn't see him.
Aww.
The next few scenes is like almost like a montage of Hank's failed romantic gestures. He just keeps trying to do these things. I would call them shortcuts. And his efforts just keep backfiring. He even rents a pig, like Bill had described in the romantic comedy.
They're trying to, he's trying to kind of tape over the bad romance story with a new romance story, and Peggy is not having it.
Nope.
And that pig ain't having it neither.
Yeah, it falls really flat. Seems a lot more like real life. I don't know what he was thinking with the whole, like, washing dishes thing and splashing water on her. Hank, the romantic thing to do there is to wash the dishes, not to go splash water on her while she does it.
I mean, they both have a teenage mentality about this whole thing, because it comes from their teenage years. Mm. And instead of approaching it like adults, they're regressing.
Mm. Yeah.
It reminds me so much of Bobby in the caves with the skull can. Just...
clueless.
Just doesn't get that splashing the water makes a mess and it's not what a girl wants.
Right. It's time to wrap up the B story. Bobby has gathered all some of his friends. Dooley the Deadpan Bully is there for the big reveal of who the secret Meyer is, because she's coming. I mean, clearly it's Carrie Strug. Carrie Strug is coming. Let's just say it. Carrie Strug is coming.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be not Carrie Strug, but Peggy's mom.
When the door opens and it's grandma. Even Dooley is there to say...
Your grandmother loves you. I love that line.
So, I guess Bobby told the world that Carrie Strug was coming, and they all wanted to meet her, and...
poor Bobby.
That was a humiliating moment for Bobby, I'm sure.
Contrast the version of Peggy's mom that shows up and picks Bobby up and calls him boo-boo with the version of Peggy's mom that we saw in the flashback, this very severe woman. Has she changed that much, or is Peggy's memory just skewed about her mom?
Could be a little of both. I know that grandparents are very different from parents. The stories I hear about my grandparents from, like, my mom and my aunt are so different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. The parent-grandparent contrast is at play there.
Then again, grandparents aren't raising the kids. They're just there to spoil them.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's the reward you get for being a parent. It may be a hint here of where Peggy, or an indication here of where Peggy gets some of that physical strength, because did you see how easily her mom picked Bobby up? Bobby's not, I mean, you know, he's a short dude, but he's stocky. I mean, he's
got probably 100 some odd pounds.
Yeah, got some meat on those bones, and she just reached right down and picked him up like it was nothing. So maybe that's where Peggy gets some of that.
Yeah, well, as we learn much later in the series, she's a ranch hand, or a rancher or something, so she's got to have some strength to
that's
her.
True. She's a hardy woman. Yeah, this episode, I guess, is just having us ignore this fact, but Peggy's mom lives in Montana. At least,
well, she's come to visit.
Right, except that they just haven't even talked about it. Like, the fact that her mom's in town has not come up. You know, she just pops in. Pops in.
Well, I mean, she had sent a Valentine saying she would be there Valentine's Day. You know.
I guess I see what you're saying.
I remember my grandparents coming to visit on Valentine's Day. Guess that was just when she could get time to come.
Yeah, that makes sense. She showed up that night. That's the night she got into town. Okay, I get it.
But this circles back to Peggy. How was Peggy at West Arlen High School if she lived in Montana?
I think the show is not terribly consistent with the timeline on Peggy's life.
I feel like having a different writer for every episode is part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily very consistent with this.
But this is a source of annoyance for me a lot of the time. I mean, I guess it's possible that they lived in Montana, then Peggy and her family came down to Arlen for, I don't know, like a year or two, and then her parents went back to Montana.
Back to Montana, yeah. I think they just changed. Like, this episode doesn't really give any indication that Peggy's mom or her mom and dad live in Montana. We kind of learned that much later in the series. So, maybe just kind of go back to what I was saying. Maybe she lives in Arlen, and she just popped over that night, just drove across town from West Arlen over to Rainy Street. This feels like a detail that kind of changed over time.
Yeah. See, at first I was like, wait, which grandma is this? And then I remembered it can't be Tilly.
Yeah.
Because we've already met Tilly.
But it was kind of out of nowhere. I don't blame Bobby for not seeing that coming at all.
Well,
his secret admirer was his grandma, but I didn't see it coming either.
I mean, I would have been so disappointed. And then we're in the kitchen. They're singing a Chuck Mangione song.
Yeah, Feel So Good, which doesn't have any lyrics, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Da, da, yeah.
Da, 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 da. I guess that's singing a Chuck Mangione song.
I guess that's a romantic overture. So, who are these women? And where is Min?
Yeah, where was
Min?
Why
isn't Min there?
We need
Min.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. The more Peggy describes these failed romantic overtures, the more romantic they start sounding.
Yeah.
And
the more she realizes.
Yeah, that they're... is something sweet in the fact that Hank keeps trying, and I think that's what's happening. So they have a legit story now that's based in truth and not based in this cover-up. And it's so legit now, it's airport-worthy.
Yeah. And then there's some dirty talk. Peggy borrows someone's cell phone to call Hank from the kitchen. And she mentions pie. I guess. And yeah, I was thinking about Warrant's cherry pie during this exchange.
That makes sense.
And it got a little dirty. It got a little adulty.
Did whether Hank was up for it with his legit back injury this time.
They kind of also taped over that moment with their more adult version of dirty phone talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the truth is, this seems a little unsatisfying to me. That's kind of it. They never really deal with the trust and humiliation issues that seem to be behind Peggy's anger. They just kind of make up when Peggy starts feeling like she's being romanced again. But Peggy never really saw this whole thing as anything but the loss of the story. So if she's regained the story, problem solved.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't really anything to resolve. You know, she got over it. I mean, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
She got out of her teenage head and got into her adult head, and all is right with the world. So then we've got the closing credits, and that's how the episode ends. Bobby's just sitting there watching TV, eating chips, while everyone's wrangling the pig. And Luann asks, am I supposed to kill this pig?
Once again, Luann doing the traditional male thing, because that's just what Luann does. Luann can do those sorts of things.
Yeah, she is a well-versed woman.
Okay, what'd you think of this episode?
Well, I thought there were a lot of good one-liners, like Bobby when he says, Mom? Dad, there's a pig in the house. The big feet line. There's just lots of good one-liners in this episode.
There were.
But I feel like it didn't live up to its potential. So I'm going to give it a 6.
Mm. I think I'm in agreement with that. I think I would give it a 6 also. Kind of an above-average episode. And definitely had some good funny stuff in there. Not the greatest, not the worst. Yep, I would agree.
Well, fellow Propaniacs, that's our story, and we're sticking to it. Join us in a fortnight as we spend 3 days in the condo. Until then, feel free to drop us a line at MeltonMcMainerberry@gmail.com or DaisyDurndle@yahoo.com. Bye now.
Bye.